Welcome to Not Terrible.
I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham. This is episode 35 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're talking with Brooke Randolph. Brooke is a licensed mental health counselor here to help us understand different therapy options, how to identify a good therapist, and what to do outside the therapist's office to make the most of your mental health journey. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist.
Hi, welcome to Not Terrible. Today's guest is Brooke Randolph. She is a therapist, speaker, and author. Brooke's specialties include adoption, brain spotting, and relationships. And she is here today to discuss what's a good therapist, how to find one, and how to get rid of one if you if they're not that great. Thanks so much for being with us today, Brooke.
Good to be here.
All right, so can you tell us, before we jump in, what is your background? I know on your website it says LMHC, and both Jess and I had to ask what that meant. So if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a licensed mental health counselor. I am licensed in Indiana and actually soon to be licensed in Massachusetts.
Oh, but cool.
Basically, it means I have a master's degree in counseling.
Okay. Are you moving to Massachusetts?
No.
Just checking.
Okay, listeners there, don't look for her to be your new therapist. Sorry.
And so you currently run, you in Indianapolis, you own a therapy practice here, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So how long have you been a practicing therapist?
Right. I keep having to do this math. I think we're coming up on like 14 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So if we were looking for a therapist and had no idea where to start, how would we go about doing that? I'm very distracted with these plants.
Yeah, we should have moved them.
I'm sorry. Well, I'd really recommend that you ask for recommendations. Mm-hmm. So ask friends, ask family, ask your trusted Facebook friends, those kinds of people, and mm-hmm. you're more likely to get a better referral that way. What most people do is they type in therapy and their zip code and see what comes up on Google.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Is that, do you recommend that?
Depending on your zip code, you're going to get a lot of hits.
Oh, okay. That's a good point.
And usually what pops up first is Psychology Today. They have really good SEO. And they have a great listing. They have everybody. But who is at the top is based on their own algorithms and how recently they updated their profile on Psychology Today.
Gotcha. Yeah, so it's not necessarily on who's been rated as a good therapist.
No.
No. Okay.
Can you rate therapists on there?
I don't believe you can.
Okay.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Google reviews is about all you've got.
Oh,
okay.
Mm.
Good to know.
Hmm. Interesting. So I've heard before that you should always just ask your people as opposed to the internet, really. What if you don't have people or you're a little nervous or scared to admit that you need therapy? Would the next best thing be the internet?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Search and then make some contacts. Ask some questions. Mm-hmm. See if you feel comfortable.
Okay, so tell me then, I've got some names. Is it appropriate to go to multiple therapists for a first interview?
That's fine. People do that. Most people, though, once they have that initial visit and they start opening up, they don't really want to go and start it again. Mm-hmm. It just feels like they're, you know,
doing
starting over from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what would a first appointment look like?
Well, it's going to kind of depend on the therapist. I know you described once when you went to see Lisa for the mm-hmm. first time that she pulled out the computer and she asked a lot of questions. And that's going to be an intake when you're using your insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Or a therapist who very frequently uses insurance, and that's going to be their kind of MO, that they're going to have it where they're taking down very specific information.
Interesting. Gotcha. She does not take insurance.
She does not.
No.
But maybe she did in the past and was trained in
so
that way,
like,
and just
her,
keeps
yeah,
doing
that's
it
her.
That she wants to have
okay.
so much background information.
Okay.
Where I've never accepted insurance, and I'm I sit down first and ask, so what questions do you have for me? Mm-hmm. And some people have lots and some people have none, right? And then we just kind of start and see where they want to start. And I may ask questions, but I don't always go through the whole list because it's important to meet people where they are.
Right. Okay.
And so sometimes those questions that you got asked in the first session, I may be getting to in the third. We just kind of do it a little differently.
Okay. What if you go to that first appointment and you don't like your therapist?
You ghost them. You never go back.
Forgot I'm moving. See you later.
So you can just give the feedback, and hopefully a good therapist will ask for that or open up for that. Mm-hmm. But to just say, you know, I was really uncomfortable with this. It would help if you talked a little bit more, those kinds of things. And if they are good, they will be able to adjust, or they may say, hey, that's not how I work. Why don't you go see this other person?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow. That has to be two very open people for the therapist and the patient to both go, oh, we don't click. This is not going to work. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had that situation?
That's a good question. I don't know that any client has been open enough to have that
to
conversation.
Say that, yeah, to say that. Yeah, I don't think that I would ever do it. I just think I'd stop going.
I might send a text message or an email.
Well, that's nice of you, but I wouldn't
be 100% truthful in it. I'd just be like, oh, something came up.
Mm, yep. Sorry. Sick kids for like ever. So I'll catch you later.
Have you ever done that where you have realized once a patient has come into your office that you aren't the best suited, maybe just like education wise or like training wise, and they need something that you don't offer, and then you will tell them to go somewhere else? Is that pretty common?
Well, that's best practice.
Okay.
If you know that you're not going to best help this person, then mm-hmm. you at least give them the option mm-hmm. and let them know, like, I think you'd really benefit from this, and I don't have that training now. Now, I had, with the brain spotting, I had an incident where I said that to a client, and he said, you just need to go get trained. And he really kind of pushed until I did it a lot faster than I'd intended to.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Really?
That's interesting. So were you comfortable with that in that relationship? Like, did he mm-hmm. believe in you and that much that he thought she's going to be really good at this, she should do this?
Yes, and he wasn't comfortable starting with somebody new.
Right.
And he'd done that a couple times in the past. And so he's like, you just need to do this. And so in that case, I actually did an at-home study program and then went and did the live training at the secondary. But I did the mm-hmm. at-home study so I could work with him right away.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. And then got some supervision, of course.
Right, right. Wow, and I'm sure you don't regret it now, right?
No.
Yeah, that's good.
Was he just a really well-versed in therapy patient? Like, how did he even know about it?
He didn't. I brought it up to him.
Okay. Oh, because you said, I think this would be beneficial for you. And then he said, no, you go do it.
It will be beneficial when you do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
My next question, so I don't know if this is kind of a weird... Therapy is expensive. How do you go knowing you're getting the most out of your time mm-hmm. and you're not just sitting somewhere for an hour?
And listening to somebody go, mm-hmm, yes, and how does that make you feel? You know, because I know that growing up, going to many therapists, that I always was like, this is a scam. Like, how do I tell my dad, like, this is a waste of your money. Mm-hmm. What are we doing here? And then it wasn't until I met Lisa that I was like, this is why people go to therapy. This is what you're supposed to be paying for. And I have no problem at all writing that check each week. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's different ways that you can work to get the most out of it. So it's being more efficient. Mm-hmm. One is the power therapies like EMDR and brain spotting that we've mentioned. They tend to be a lot more efficient. And so you can get through things more quickly.
Right.
And the other thing I like to say is I really love working with readers, writers, and questioners. So the people who are going to say, okay, what's that book that you recommend, and go home and read it and then come back with things highlighted. Mm-hmm. Or who are going to make a list of, I thought of this thing, and they bring it in and we just start talking about them.
Yeah.
And the people who question and have those things. And by really engaging in that way, you tend to get a lot more out of your work.
That's interesting, because I remember Lisa called me out one time and she said, I'm never going to work harder than you're willing to work. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. I hear what you're saying. All right. What
and
was
and like she can't.
Yeah, she can't. Right, right.
She can't do anything in your day-to-day life.
Right, so. Yeah, and she can't make up for what I'm lacking in those mm-hmm. moments. So, yeah, I was like, oh, wow, okay. But realizing that she's going to work as hard as I'm willing to work and going, okay, this is a team effort if I want it to be, really put things in perspective at the beginning when I got to know her and she got to know me. Mm-hmm. Speaking of readers, writers, and questioners, you're an author, we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. And what books do you want to share?
Right. I've written two, well, actually three, but it's not yet published.
Oh, okay.
Kids' workbooks. So one is the Bully book, one is the Lost book, and soon will be the Choice book.
Okay.
And so those are workbooks kids can do, preferably with an adult, but that can be a parent or a school counselor or a therapist to work through those with them. And I was also asked to be a contributing author to adoption therapy, perspectives from clients and therapists on, oh, I don't even remember the whole title. It's been a long time. On perspective from clients and clinicians on processing and healing post-adoption issues, which was published in 2014. So hopefully you'll give me grace for forgetting that.
No, that's okay.
And then I was the organizing editor for It's Not About You, Understanding Adoptee Search, Reunion, and Open Adoption. And that's written for birth and adoptive parents primarily.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And their therapist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And you have a personal story with adoption, and that's why you're such a great author when it comes to this, I assume, an editor. And do you want to share a little bit of that?
Yeah. So in 2007, I was asked to help found an adoption agency. And they said, you're going to be in charge of social services because we don't have anybody else. So I was head in to let's educate myself, learn everything I can, get as many stories as I can, and really sat down with as many people as I could, and through that became really an adoptee advocate and ally. And then in, what year was it? Well, it was just about 6 years ago, mm-hmm. I brought home a then 6-year-old boy that I adopted internationally. And that has been one of the most difficult and most rewarding things that I've ever done.
Wow, that's awesome. Wow, that's interesting that you have the perspective on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, yeah. So, oh my gosh, I can imagine that you would be a huge resource to families in those situations. So I was thinking of some red flag situations where you would be in therapy and you go, you know what, this therapist either has no business being a therapist or is not for me. Could you share a couple of those as a patient, what you should look for or what you should, what those red flags would be in terms of you need to move on from this, mm-hmm. from this healthcare professional?
Yeah, I would certainly watch for when their ego comes into the room. And of course, everyone's going to have that to some degree, but if you're providing some feedback and they're getting really defensive, then that's not a real positive working relationship. So that would be something I would be really concerned about.
Okay.
I would definitely look for therapists who have advanced trainings. Some of our continuing education units are really simple.
Okay.
And some are like deep trainings. Our training programs are pretty basic, and we all know that there's a lot of therapists out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need the people who are willing to dig deeper, learn more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like to read. You guys like to read, but not everybody likes to read. But so people who are learning more in one way or the other.
Okay, yeah. You don't want that basic therapist who just does the bare minimum. Yeah, that's no good. Okay. From that question, what would be something that you would say, hey, this is an A+ therapist. This is going to be somebody who is going to be good for you and work as hard as you're willing to work.
Yeah, I would certainly look for people who are specialists, people who are not trying to be a jack of all trades.
Right. Okay.
Right. If they're trying to do everything, then you may do everything, but you're not going to do anything really well. Mm. And if you're focused in on these are the things that I do really well, they may also be willing to work with you on other things,
mm-hmm.
but that they've really invested in those things and grown their skills in those ways. And then that can apply to other things.
Gotcha. Okay. So the whole knowing a lot about a little doesn't really apply in therapy.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be,
it's not going to be helpful.
Keep you real basic.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, my specialty is in adoption, particularly working with adult adoptees. Mm-hmm. And recently I started working with a woman who discovered that she was donor conceived.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of similarities, so that worked well. And there's some about being donor conceived that she's teaching me, but then there's also things that I can say, hey, this sounds really familiar, and check in on those things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. Hmm. For the sake of humor, I don't know if you can share any of these stories, but do you just have some, like, therapist horror stories that you could just be like, I had to get out of there, and I had to get out of there fast? I mean, obviously,
legally,
can you do this? Don't like, the therapist oath, like, don't go back on that or anything. Just checking. Is there? They're too recent. That's funny.
Too soon. Too
That's
soon,
it.
Guys.
That's funny.
Can you talk a little bit about finances when it comes to therapy? Because I think a lot of times Jess and I hear this response of like, I would love to have a therapist or I would love to go to therapy, mm-hmm. but like, it's not always cost effective. It's not always something you can add to your budget, or if insurance isn't accepted, it's just, it can be a hard financial thing to do. So, what do you tell people that want therapy and just can't afford it?
Yeah, so there's a lot of options.
Okay.
One thing I think Jess was touching on is you do get what you pay for. Mm-hmm. And when you have a really good therapist, you're getting your money's worth. And sometimes there's not so great therapists that are charging a lot of money, mm-hmm. also. So that exists. Mm-hmm. You can ask if they have a sliding scale. You can pay with your HSA. You can turn the receipts into your insurance company yourself. The problem with that, the reason that I don't accept insurance, or one of the big reasons, is because when your insurance pays for your therapy, then they require a diagnosis. And so that goes on your permanent medical record. And certain diagnoses can then impact the cost of your life insurance premiums.
Wow.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Did not know that.
Me neither.
Interesting.
In some cases, insurance companies can limit the treatment, or they can try to direct it, mm-hmm. and say, we're only going to pay for it if you do these things. Mm-hmm. So in those ways, I find it really not client-centered to take the insurance up front.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So if someone turns in their receipts after insurance, does the insurance still ask for those questions?
They still ask for the diagnosis code and the CPT code, which doesn't really matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
So some other things that you can do to be more cost effective are, there are lower cost clinics where usually, like, where younger therapists are being trained.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. But if you find a really good therapist who has an intern, then we hope that the intern's learning something from them.
Okay.
Right. And if they've had the chance to choose that intern themselves, right, or someone who is newer. I mean, mm-hmm. one of my associates, I think she's fabulous. If she didn't work for me, I would potentially go see her as a therapist. Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow. Very cool.
Do interns charge less, or do you pay what you're paying the therapist?
No, it's usually less. What I see across the board is it's somewhere between, I'll say, $20 and $40, although mostly I'm seeing $25 and $30 to see an intern.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know, too, that our counselor, Lisa, will hold group sessions, and that's another option. So that's a lot less expensive when you're going to a group setting. And she usually does them in like 6-week courses or 10-week, you know, so you kind of know what you're going for. And there's obviously a topic, or it's specific to something. I know she hosts some teen group sessions, which have been really helpful. So that's another option.
Group therapy is actually really effective. Mm-hmm. It's just getting people into the idea that it's okay.
Right.
You can actually, and sometimes, get more out of it than you can individual therapy. But not every individual wants to participate in group therapy. Mm-hmm. I would certainly think for teens and kids, it could be really beneficial keep them on track. They can get more out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's less costly.
Right.
Especially if you're not sure how much your child's going to engage in it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So true. Mm-hmm. That brings us to kids in therapy. And I know that, like I said before, my personal experience in going through therapy through my teens, I was very, very hesitant to send my son to a therapist that I hadn't seen already. So when it did work out that he could see the same counselor, I jumped at the chance because I would be terrified. And I think my dad would probably be pretty upset to hear that a lot of the money that he put into it felt like a waste at the time.
Mm-hmm. And I have parents say to me, you know, we're willing to keep paying for him to come once a month just so he has the relationship for when he needs it.
For when he needs it.
And see, so they and know yeah. that sometimes it's,
yeah,
you know, the kid's resisting.
Yeah. I've been in the same boat, but to the point that Lisa has said, he doesn't need to come anymore. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure?
Well, I mean,
he's going to go to college in 3 years and I think he's going to need to talk to you. That she's like, then we'll address it then.
Yes, you know, you can come back.
Yeah, you can come back. Yes. But I think it's always good, even if it's just to introduce your child to the idea that there is no stigma here and you can come and as needed. It's not a forever thing. It's not an always thing. Mm-hmm. But this is an option in your toolbox of coping.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you, Brooke, do you do group? Is that something that...
I have in the past. Yeah. I'm not running any groups now. Mm-hmm. Natalie at Counseling at the Greenhouse is getting ready to start a group probably in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking to do one for highly sensitive persons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be great. So at this point, no, I'm not running any groups.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is there a specific topic that you think is more effective in a group as opposed to one-on-one?
I think there's a lot of research about addictions in groups.
Okay.
That is not my area of specialty.
Right.
I absolutely have somebody I consult with all the time on that topic.
Yeah.
But I think most things you can get a lot out of in group therapy.
In group therapy, yeah.
You know, Yalom wrote this whole big, thick book on group therapy and why it is so effective.
Yeah, yeah. Like anything, I think that when we are in therapy, as long as we're pairing it with other things and we're doing homework, whether you have one-on-one and you're going to group also, or you're possibly doing a workbook or... I know right now I'm listening to a form of therapy in conjunction with my one-on-one talk therapy. And I feel like if you're doing the work outside, whatever it is, it's going to benefit your one-on-one also.
Right. I mean, you don't get a whole lot of life change if you go to the gym for 1 hour a week.
Right.
Right. I wish.
I know. That's the dream.
So we have to kind of do those things to build up those habits.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, work on really changing those neural pathways.
Right, right. It is. It's, and I say this often to Lisa because I'm practicing. Like when I haven't quite mastered something that she thinks that I should have got the hang of already, I said, I'm practicing. Every time, it's practice. And she was like, yeah. What does she say? She says, it usually takes highly sensitive people. They're slow learners, but I like how you keep saying that you're practicing. And she goes, I'll say that instead of slow learner from now on. Yeah.
It just takes more practice.
It does. It does. So what brought you to this profession? I mean, did there something that, look, I'm prying. I'm like, hey, did something really go wrong in your childhood that you decided to be a therapist? Yeah, that's a good question, Jesse.
Well, that tends to be... a common answer. Okay. So you're asking because right. you've heard it before.
Right.
In my case, not really.
Not really.
I have like almost irritatingly functional parents. They're awesome.
Yeah.
They're wonderful and supportive all the time. So I didn't have that. In some ways, I really think it was a calling.
Yeah.
Just this idea that was put in my head that you want to do this and people are really interesting and mm-hmm. I really... you know, I nerded out on the science of it, and I studied psychology instead of social work because I liked that stuff.
Right.
And then things just kind of fell into place.
Wow, that's awesome. Is there anything that you kind of daydream about specializing in next or diving deeper into?
Oh, my goodness. I I am diving deep into brain spotting.
Okay.
Really working on a bigger scale on getting into that. And then I am also a certified Imago relationship therapist.
Ooh.
And so as I, slightly more slowly, but I'm progressing through the different stages of that. In March, I'm offering my first workshop. And then as I get more trainings, I'll be able to offer longer workshops that are specific for different things. And so that's my path for now. That should
awesome.
Take me 2 or 3 years to work through both of those.
Right. Short-term goals. I understand. Right. And tell us a little bit more about this relationship therapy. It's Imago?
Imago.
Okay. What does that stand for?
So Imago is the Latin word for image. And it's talking about our image of love and how we developed our image of love, which then determines how we choose and who we choose and then what we do with that.
Okay.
In, 30 years ago, because they're just re-releasing the book, Harville Hendrix published Getting the Love You Want and was on Oprah.
Yeah.
And then from there, because once you're on Oprah,
It
things
just
spread and got bigger.
Uh-huh.
And so this is one of there's three top forms of relationship therapy. So Imago, EFT, and Gottman. A lot of people know Gottman because of his research.
Yeah.
And then that lines up with, I'm not as familiar with EFT, but Gottman's research lines right up with Imago also. And so I like reading that, although I don't have the training in Gottman right now.
Right. Okay. Wow. All right. Good to know. And what was the other one that you said? The
EFT.
Yeah. What is that?
I think it's emotionally focused therapy.
Gotcha. That sounds terrible.
There's also an EFT therapy that's about tapping. That's not about relationships. So.
Okay.
I don't.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Not the expert here.
Gotcha. All right.
Well, I like that you had brought up brain spotting. So in a prior episode, we talked about Jess's EMDR therapy and we have lots of questions and curiosity for brain spotting. Could you just in 1 minute tell us a little teeny tiny bit about it, knowing that you're going to come back and
really
talk
dive
a
into
lot
it.
More into it later?
Yeah. So it's a power therapy. We want to focus the midbrain where the memories and emotions are stored and let your brain do the processing. So how I explain it to kids and how I'll tell you about my child in a minute, but how I explain it to kids is your brain has the same superpower as Wolverine from the X-Men. Wolverine can heal himself, and your brain can heal itself. We just have to set the right environment for it to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then if I drag my kid along to fairs and vendor booths, he's like, brain spotting makes me a superhero. And then parents are like, oh, well, maybe we should let our kid do this.
Right, right. Uh-huh. Wow, okay. Huh. Yeah, so, it makes the EMDR and how that does it. Basically, you relive, and we said this before, you revisit the memory until you have basically a different file folder to put it in where you know that you're safe, the memory's still there, but you're no longer in danger, is how I understand EMDR, and that's my just patient review. But now this makes me curious about brain spotting. And I mean, it's the same science.
Very similar?
Yeah.
So brain spotting developed out of EMDR, adding in somatic experiencing and then some neuroscience. And then we've added more things and bringing them all together. So it's similar.
Right.
And we've added some other things, simplified some things.
Do you use the machine? No. So there's nothing like that? Or do you tap?
No.
No.
So actually, we sometimes use bilateral music, which means it flows from one ear to the other because it can be tuned out almost. It's less stimulating, so it's rocking the brain where it needs to go. But when you have something tapping or in your hands, you never forget that. And so it's keeping your neocortex engaged even just a little bit.
Okay.
So we can go deeper into the brain without it.
Wow. All right. Good to know. All right, I'm going to graduate from EMDR, and I'm going to go to brain spotting.
So when people call in, it seems like a lot of people just start going down the list, and schedule with the first person they reach.
Oh,
you mean when they Google?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Hmm.
And are you saying?
Because I may call somebody back And even if it's 24 hours later, they're like, you're the only one who's called me back. So I want to schedule with you. And they don't have any questions for me. And most of the time when people call, they don't have any questions.
So what would be good questions for a therapist when you call?
I'd ask about their training.
Yeah.
Ask if they feel comfortable working with you. And how often they've worked with these kinds of things. You know, depression, anxiety, everyone's worked with that to a degree. So
right.
those mm-hmm. are
So if you have something specific, like you should be upfront with that from mm-hmm. the get-go. Like if you have an addiction issue, if you have a relationship issue, if you have trauma from your childhood, you should be upfront with that information in that phone call.
Yeah, if you want to get the best
right.
stuff or whatever right. you suspect is going on.
Right.
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 There's a lot different between saying, you know, yeah. I want marriage counseling versus I think I may be experiencing narcissistic abuse.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this I may work with. This I may send not, you to yeah. somebody who's even better at that.
Right. And I know that what you go to therapy for is usually not what you're at therapy for, I've learned. And would you agree that there's a sweet spot when you really can open up and you see in your patient, oh, this is why you're here. You've been masking a little bit and you've been giving me the backstory and maybe your dad wasn't so nice or he didn't talk to you or your mother was an alcoholic, whatever it is. And then you go, oh, here it is. This is the fourth, I always say episode, like it's a show, but this is the fourth appointment, the fifth appointment, the sixth appointment. For me personally, it was the sixth appointment. Where it just like, I just burst open and was like, ah, and she's like, okay, now we're getting somewhere, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you know that was there before?
No, I knew it was there, but I was like, oh no, we're talking about what's going on right now. I don't want to talk about what happened mm-hmm. in my childhood. That's not something
you
I want to
see
visit.
The connection.
Yes, I didn't see the connection. And I thought that I had buried it down deep enough that I was like, oh no, I have dealt with this and I'm dealing with it by not acknowledging it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a common thing. As soon as somebody starts to get that comfort level with you, I assume, is when it's like, ah.
It is. And some people are still going to say, nope, nope, that's not a thing. We're not going there.
Right.
Right. You have to get,
yeah.
you have to be ready.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to really, really share all facets of your life, even if they're the ones that you've been hiding for a long time in order, like we said, to get the bang for the buck, really, mm-hmm. is that you really have to be an open book.
And have some curiosity about yourself.
Okay.
Right? That the therapist may ask a question, and you're like, no, that's not a thing. Or you can sit with it.
Yeah.
And give it a moment and mm-hmm. see what does come up. And
right.
be open to whatever's coming up in you, whatever ideas you have, or that, well, a part of me wants to reject that. And I also think there's a part of me that recognizes there's something there.
Right.
I just don't really want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we can work with that.
Right. 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 So being honest with where you are with your crap. That's a technical term, actually. It's
scientific.
Yeah. Scientific. Being honest with where you are is still being someplace
right.
instead of just in denial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So give yourself credit for that.
Yeah. And recognize all parts of you that, right. Even right. though 90% of you wants to say, no, that's not the thing.
Yeah.
Right. To just be honest with that 10% that there is a small part of me that wonders if you're right and I don't want to deal with it.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
On average, how long is someone in therapy? Like,
oh man,
is that a horrible
so
question?
So varies.
Yeah. So like I know for my husband, we're just in therapy for yep. the rest of his life. We're just going to be in therapy. For my kids, they stopped. Like, they didn't mm-hmm. need it. I'm in therapy once a month, and I mean, could probably leave it if I needed to, but I don't want to. I think sometimes people get scared because when they call and make the appointment, they could do it for a little bit, but, like, long-term sustainability is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for Jess, she likes to take breaks and then she comes back. And just like there's different patterns for different people. Is there a time that you say you need to give me this long before you decide if you want to continue this or not?
Not usually.
No.
I really want with individual therapy for it to be a relationship for us to work together because it's your life.
Mm-hmm.
When we're working in a couple and they're coming in crisis, I may say, give me this many sessions before mm-hmm. you make a decision.
Yeah.
If you, like, you're not even going to think about, am I going to stay, am I going to leave, until we work through these things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you can, but other than that, I really want us to, you know, and that's partially just managing the dynamics of everyone.
Yes.
Right? But when it's one-on-one, we can flow more easily.
Right. There's an ebb and a flow, and you can get used to, like, okay, I know this was a hard session. Probably won't see her for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We'll catch up then. Yeah. I'm not talking about myself.
No, or this was a really hard session. I'd better hold that space on Monday just in case.
Oh, that's true. That's probably, that would be the healthier option.
Uh-huh. Just like, see you next month.
Uh-huh.
Peace.
No. No, but it is true.
I mean, I see some people a handful of times, mm-hmm. and then some people I'm seeing 5 years later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And most of those, you know, do a period and then take some time off and then mm-hmm. come back. I don't know that anyone has been, no, certainly no one's been weekly mm-hmm. for multiple years.
Right.
But there are certainly people that I see very regularly and have for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that this happens a lot because I've talked to my friends who are trying to find good therapists and they're struggling. I don't know if this is like a type or a school or a style, but the, yes, tell me more. The person, the therapist who doesn't interact, the therapist who doesn't challenge you, the therapist who doesn't require anything of you other than to just sit there and talk and stare and shake their head at you. Is that, because for me, that's a bad, I need interaction. I need you to ask me questions. I need you to provoke thought.
To guide.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a lot that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. That it's just like, I'm going to charge you to sit in here and just talk at me for 50 minutes.
So that style can come out of a variety of training.
Okay.
Right. It could be very psychoanalytic. It could be from this. It could be from that. Right. But coming back to, the good therapist is going to recognize that doesn't work for you, or is going to hear your feedback.
Oh, okay.
Is going to know that you want more.
Right.
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 And push you. And I mean, that can be beneficial in certain ways,
mm-hmm.
but if you're just spinning your wheels and not getting anything,
right,
then it doesn't seem very ethical to just let you keep doing that.
Right. So wait, so this is, this is how one-sided I am. So it is beneficial for some people to just sit there and talk for 50 minutes and not mm-hmm. to be challenged or engaged or questioned. So that's...
Some people can, yeah. They kind of talk themselves through something.
Yeah.
Or as they're doing it, they're rocking deeper into their brain. They're coming to new understandings.
Yeah.
Right? They don't necessarily need somebody interrupting that.
Right. They just need that presence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
I think there are times when I go to Lisa, because I only see her once a month, and if it's been a bad month, I like throw up on her, verbally barf on her, and I know she's just like, yeah, you just got to talk it all out. And then I eventually stop and we have more of a conversation. But for a minute, I'm just like, and then this happened.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
It's annoying to me and I'm the one doing it. Like I understand that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming she's trained to also recognize what's coming through
uh-huh.
and what's the pathway that it's doing it and what's the pattern and what are the connections and
yeah.
seeing all of that. So she's getting information.
Mm-hmm.
She's getting a lot of information, actually, when you kind of just
right.
verbally vomit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not about necessarily the facts, but also seeing how your brain is working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had someone say that they were going to therapy and they came home and they said, my therapist said I should leave my husband. And I was like, are you sure about that? Yep, that's what they told me. They told me I needed to leave my husband. I was like, I don't think a therapist does that. I don't think a good therapist tells you what to do ever.
I think they just help you
get
to where you...
Yeah, if you feel... I was like, you mean they said these words out? Yep, said them out loud. I think that you are making your therapist a scapegoat here, and you just want to leave your husband.
Did she leave her husband?
No.
See, that's why we don't tell anybody what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually had this conversation a couple weeks ago with a client, and I asked him, well, why do you think that I never tell anyone what to do? Yeah. He's like, I don't know, but it's been making me crazy.
Yeah.
But it's because we all have rebellious spirits.
Yeah.
And if I give you the idea, you're going to immediately reject it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you come to it on your own,
right,
then that is much more powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I had a similar situation, and full disclosure here, but I was in a relationship where he's a narcissist. And then I finally went and I was like, I'm the narcissist. And she was like, good job. You know? And I was just like, I get it now, you know? But it was actually one of those situations where we were both and we were kind of just feeding each other. And it was just an ugly situation. But for this whole time, I was just, projecting. And it was. And when I got there, she was like, good job. She's like, you've been white knuckling this for a long time. I'm really proud of you, you know? And I was, but that is. I never thought that going to therapy and going, I'm a narcissist, would be a really good session. But turns out it was, mm-hmm. to be honest with yourself. And mm-hmm. that's kind of the goal, is to finally face facts. The things you already know in your heart and your head, and for you to go, now I accept these things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, you can't do anything differently until you recognize what is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on Not Terrible. This has been enlightening, and I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
If anybody is looking for you professionally or on social media, where can they go?
It is depending on the platform.
Okay.
Because my name is really long.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's either B. Randolph, LMHC, or Brooke Randolph, LMHC.
Okay.
Or Facebook, I think, spells out licensed mental health counselor.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
Okay.
And we'll link to those in the show notes.
Absolutely. And we look forward to having you back for our episode on brain spotting.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks,
Brooke.
You have been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for our newsletter for bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from ArtTeach88, who writes, "One can't help but be enchanted by both Mary and Jess. This podcast is often just what I need when I need it. It is informative, interesting, and funny. It's like listening to two of your best friends having a conversation at the kitchen table."
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with the Off the Air podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.